You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Hey, East Side stand-up listener. As always, we appreciate you downloading the podcast and want to ask you a quick favor. If you haven't already, we'd love it if you checked out rednationonline.ca, added us on Twitter at rednationonline, give us the thumbs up on Facebook, as well as iTunes. Any or all of those would be awesome. Thanks so much, and enjoy another episode of East Side Stand Up.
Sorry. Into the path of DK here. DK twisting and turning against We Met. Comes back to Jonathan Osorio and knocked in by Robert Anshaw. And Toronto FC take a lead 15 minutes in again.
Sunday, October 27th. It's Waking the Reds, Duncan Fletcher, and I'm Ian Clark. And a day later, we're going over Toronto FC's 1-0 victory over the Montreal Impact to finish the season on a positive note. It's an unofficial post-mortem as the match is analyzed with 2014 on our minds. We look at the components that made up another disappointing year, try to name a key poor decision and good ones from 2013, as well as our candidates for Toronto FC's Player of the Year. All in the next 45 minutes on East Side Stand Up. It'll be testing the sound levels, but to roll into this or plow ahead as we always do, the day after, mm-hmm. time of recovery, after what was probably planned to be could have been a rougher night, but surprisingly, there's a little bit to celebrate. I was celebrating in a different way, but I got up this morning, watched it, and I was like, wow,
that was a competent performance.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. And I think the question off the top, Duncan, is where did this come from? Were you expecting this?
Yes and no. Not that good. I mean, Montreal haven't been good in a long time. And yeah, you know, I think there was maybe always going to be a bit of thing like Toronto's kind of going to be up for it just against Montreal. So in my head I was thinking there is a chance we can win, but I wasn't expecting it to be like that. I mean, Bendik had to make a couple of saves, but Montreal were never really in the game. It was, TFC only scored once. I mean, they're still TFC, but hey.
Yeah.
It was better than I would have thought.
Yeah, I have a lot of trouble kind of just putting my finger on what it is with the Impact. On paper, much better quality, better experience, and it seems every time they come here, they really struggle to just put one over on us. Yeah. And Toronto comes out almost every time. And I don't think you can just chalk it up to, Montreal-Toronto rivalry. There's definitely something else going on there that,
haven't won at BMO Field.
No.
Ever, so.
And there's two things that I was looking at from this game is, of course, they've never won at BMO Field. And if I'm not mistaken, Toronto's never lost their last home game of a season. It's always been draws, and they've always won. 2007, we had the draw against New England. Eight was Chicago.
We
beat
Chicago.
2009, that was Real Salt Lake, but then we went on to lose.
Yes.
2010's a blank. 2011 was another tie with New England. But then we had Montreal last year was a draw, and then New England a year before was a draw.
Yes.
Except for maybe last year against Montreal, they've always been pretty entertaining games. And Toronto's always kind of found a way to finish or leave us hanging on a positive note, maybe thinking things are better than they really are.
Yes. Just tease you a little. This hasn't worked out all season, but hey, look at this. Come on, you want more of this in a few months, don't you? Yeah.
Renewals are coming up.
Yeah.
Renewals are coming up. They got something to sell.
Yeah. I mean, I went to the game, some friends that were there, and so it was basically the first game that this guy had been to. And he was like, "Oh, he was enjoying it." He's like, "Ah, I'm gonna come back tomorrow with this." So, all right, you bastards, you sucked another one in somehow. I don't get it, but
well, I've always sort of thought, but I think it's been pretty obvious to those who follow them closely, and you see how the club operates and the things that they put out there, and the videos and the marketing, and it's just really when it comes down to it, it's like, maybe just put out a team that can win, and this will sell itself.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much mean, it kind of sold itself. I mean, I don't really think it was, you know, MLSC did anything fantastic, you know, back in 2006, 2007. It was more just sort of let it happen. And, you know, just, you know, people were excited just for the idea of having a football team. So, yeah, it sold itself. And, yeah, hopefully it is a case of actually having a successful football team will, again, sell itself. And, you know, despite themselves, they can actually get that atmosphere and energy and all that sort of thing back.
Yeah. So when we're going into this game, Duncan, obviously we came out and we're very happy to finish the year on a positive note, but I want to roll through the match because I think there's a lot of things we can obviously discuss in terms of the lineup and the strategies and what happened, and then, of course, applying that to the offseason and what we're thinking about the state of this team. Maybe the first thing I wanted to get your thoughts on, that's, you know, some people, you know, everyone kind of has their, you know, the players they like and this nostalgia they feel for the club. And of course, we already mentioned Joe Bendik making some huge saves. But of course, I think most people are thinking this would be the last time to see Stefan Fry. And they decided, obviously, not to go with him between the posts.
Yeah.
I kind of think maybe considering last week's game and he really kind of bucked up and got it done when he could have maybe just said, eat it. You guys can figure this out on your own. It might have been a nice little pat on the back to say, you played a great game last week, and we're going to let you finish out your career here at home. Do you agree?
Get his 100th game. He ends 99 games in all competitions, which is, in a way, a very special TFC way of doing things. I mean, you mentioned, you know, people having favorite players and things you're nostalgic for and everything. And I'm not as sold on Fry and, you know, as a player and as a person, and, you know, everything that he seems to represent, as a lot of people are. So, you know, I wasn't that bothered about it. I'm more, you know, let's play our first team. And obviously, like, Nelson seems to think Bendik is the first team, and he's obviously going to be around next year, so there's a point to playing. I mean, you know, you'd say, oh, it'd be nice to see Fry, but, you know, Fry's not going to be back next year. I think we all know that. So, you know, do we actually benefit anything from letting Fry play this one game? So, yeah, I didn't mind him not being there. You know, I guess it's the same as Eckersley. You know, I mean, he's obviously fit, but doesn't look like he's going to be back next year. So, yeah, you know, let's put Bloom out there and see what we've got, and which, you know, I think is a backup right back. I'm okay with him. I'm hoping he's not going to be first choice by any means next year. But, yeah, it would have been nice, you know, get a, like, 3 or 4 goal lead, you know, at least that much. You know, this is TFC. And then just, you know, the last couple of minutes, like an injury time, bring Bendik off. You know, we can all give Bendik an ovation. Yeah, you've had a good season, thank you. And then, you know, bring Fry on just for that last couple of minutes just to...
That's some, you know, fantasy that, you got going,
well,
there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the first bit. Get the 2 or 3 goal lead. Yeah. And you can't do it with 2 goals. I mean, that wouldn't be safe. You know, we'd need at least 3. So it was never going to happen. But, you know, that would... I'd have been fine with that. But, you know, as for him starting, you know, it's not something I'm considering. I was reading, like, some people on Twitter were, like, you know, really talking about they were going to be booing when they announced the team if it wasn't Fry. And I said, really? I guess some people really liked Fry.
Yeah.
It's like Milos Kosic. Like, last year, I think, before I left, I think it was Neil Davidson did a big interview with him, and he was talking about, yeah, I was never going to get, you know, Steph's an icon at this club, so, you know, I think... To the fans, at least, a lot of them, he still is, I guess. To management, he no longer is.
No. And, you know, we're running through the lineup, and we're mentioning his players. I mean, I don't think there was really anything that was a surprise. I mean, obviously, Kyle Becker getting a start, maybe over Jeremy Hall, that was...
That was a bit of a surprise to me, yeah. And I feel like Becker did quite well.
I think Becker's... It's interesting how the season's played out for him, whether this was this any kind of strategy on behalf of Nelson to just really make him hungry to... kind of prove himself, and, you know, he wasn't just going to give him the minutes. And then the last 2 games, I thought he's looked okay. I mean, obviously, he hasn't looked overwhelmed, so that's a positive step for him and how this season has gone. You know, I kind of look at that midfield, and I'm interested to see going forward what Nelson seems to do, if he's going to stick with a 4-4-2, if we're going to see some changes, because it's tough to look at, for me anyways, like Convy, Becker, Osorio, Ray, and, of course, when Laba comes back, what does that mean? You know, where these guys are all going to fit in. And Becker, right now at least, I mean, maybe until he either bulks up or gets a little bit more physical, I think it's tricky to see where he fits into the big picture of this club moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, with the formation as it is right now, I think obviously Labba comes back, he's first choice. I don't see Becker really as a sort of like defensive midfielder position, really. But then, you know, he's not a winger, and we don't really have that attacking midfielder, like number 10. You know, that's maybe the sort of position he could play. What I would hope for Becker next year is that, you know, we do keep him. We don't, like, just let him go, but, you know, let's send him on loan to Ottawa or, like, Hamilton if that gets going, whatever it might be. And, you know, I think he just needs playing time. He's clearly, you know, he's got some skills. He can, you know, put a nice, like, long pass, you know, had a great shot against the bar, that sort of thing. He's got skills. It just seems like he's not quite up to speed with the full professional game. I mean, like, some of the friendlies he's played for Canada, it's like, ooh, you know, he looks okay at a friendly level. I mean, when it's, you know, the
competitive,
full professional competitive game, you know, hard-nosed pros playing 100%, it's just like a little too quick for him. And I think, you know, he's never had that, and so he just needs a season of playing regularly, just kind of get used to the tempo or that sort of thing, and then hopefully can come back sort of with that experience and with his skills, and, you know, actually be able to contribute. I can't remember exactly who it is, but I know there's somebody who's often compared it to Graham Zusi. I mean, when he was first with Kansas City, his first couple of years never really got going, and then eventually kind of found his comfort level and is now, you know, a huge part of their team. So that's really optimistic, I think, for Becker, to be thinking Zusi. But, you know, something like that, you know, let's hopefully we can, you know, send him on loan and just stop giving up on people.
Yeah. Well, I think that's fair, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, does this club have any kind of, you know, strategy or agenda for these younger players to round out their game, and long-term vision of, you know, on an individual case-by-case basis to make them better? Because I think Becker is a guy who has some really strong assets in terms of set pieces he's decent at and can still get better. But, I mean, around that 18-yard box, and we saw it in this game, if he's got space, he's going to have a go-on-goal. And that's something I think this game I made note of to so many games this year, is that, you know, we just didn't create a lot of pressure on goal or getting lots of shots towards net. I mean, this was, I don't know the stats, I don't have them handy, but I feel like this might have been one of our better games in terms of getting attempts on goal and actual shots on target.
Probably. I mean, you know, there's obviously the goal. There's a few other, you know, Becker hit the bar, like Caldwell hit the bar or the post. Earnshaw had at least one other chance, so... Yeah, and this probably is one of the better ones as far as just shots actually on goal. If you hit the bar, does that count as a shot on goal? I don't think it does it?
But it's a
good chances. We actually, you know, we had a few.
Yeah, I think that's just something that has obviously lacked all through this season. Is that I've always just been circling, and it's obvious that our biggest Achilles heel might be our attack. The strike partnership up top has just been inconsistent and lacking any kind of quality depth.
Yeah, and I think like Bright DK, that works very well for like the game TFC are playing right now, which, you know, does involve a lot of, you know, sort of longer balls for the forwards to have to fight for or chase, or, you know, crosses into the box. And, you know, Bright DK, that works very well for that. You know, Earnshaw and, you know, Wiedemann and Brocky, it's like, you know, they're okay, they can do certain things, but they never really seem to, they work really well with what TFC is trying to do. You know, the quality isn't quite there. I mean, hopefully that's, you know, going to be the, you know, these big magical DPs that are coming in August next year or whenever it might be.
But, whenever. It's a bit of a question mark. Are we signing them in January for them to show up at the end of next season? That's going to be really helpful. Looking forward to not seeing them play for most of the season. But let's just to touch on that first half, though, and how bright it was for Toronto. And we're mentioning the players, I think, that really stood out in that sort of pocket between 20 minutes or 15 minutes through to the 35th, or pretty much through most of that first half. And, you know, when you look at the goal that was set up, I mean, you said the way that Toronto plays and how DK has sort of come in and looked pretty hungry to get his career back on track.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been a positive fit, I think, in the way this season has gone on, is finding we're going to add some players. It's, you know, they got to have the right attitude and the right motivation, and he seems to have it right now. And at the 15th minute, I mean, that's what we saw, was that he lost that ball and stripped it back. I think it was laid it off to Ray, who put it up, and he took it into the box, and Osorio gets the shot, and it goes off Earnshaw. I mean, there's a lot of players involved there that have had decent seasons that might be here next year. I'm kind of just thinking, you know, those are the three names were linked in that have been sort of, at the end of this year, you have DK, but through the start, it was Earnshaw and Osorio, and of course, looking to next year. I think I'd start with Earnshaw, and you touched on him. It's his eighth goal of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that when we're looking at we're getting new DPs in the striking position, is he going to stick around? I mean, is that a guy that we think can still be a part of this team in the 2014?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on exactly who we do end up signing. I mean, you know, it's like the one name that's out there that was mentioned quite openly a couple of times on like the broadcast yesterday is like Jermaine Defoe. I think if we've got Jermaine Defoe, we don't need Robert Earnshaw. They're not going to be working together well as a partnership. I mean, you know, if we do get someone who's more of a like a bigger body up front, maybe, you know, like a right DK, but obviously of a much higher quality, then, you know, having just a opportunistic goal scorer like Earnshaw to go with him could work. So it maybe just depends on exactly who comes in. But you know, I think, you know, would you want to keep him around as just like a backup? Maybe. I mean, it depends on how much is, do you know, his salary numbers is.
Earnshaw, I think, is on about 150.
Yeah.
He's at 150 thereabouts. Yeah, I think it's. Yeah. I think it's a tricky because I think it is going to hinge on if they're able to bring in that high level DP, and does Earnshaw fit in terms of striking depth? But in a lot of ways, you know, I think him and DK kind of offer some of the same things in terms of speed, you know, technique and stuff like that. I don't see a huge difference.
Yeah, DK is definitely a bit more, like, he's got the physicality. He's just, you know, a bigger body, and, you know, he brings that carnage, as Ryan Nelson says. You know, he does bring that, which, you know, Earnshaw, who's, what, like 5'7", 5'8", you know, he's never really going to do that. And, you know, if you're just, like, knocking up the long balls for the centre-forward to fight for the defender with, Earnshaw is very rarely going to win that, as, you know, DK does have a chance. But, I don't know, I wouldn't be against having him back. I mean, all his career he's been a very streaky scorer. So, you know, you maybe like have him on the bench, and, you know, if you bring him on every now and again, if he scores, then, you know, you just keep playing him, and then eventually he's going to go cold. So, you know, move him back to the bench, then try it again later in the season. But, it's, you know, this is not the whole capology numbers wonk. That's what it's all about, really.
Yeah.
Do you want to be spending that much on a backup striker, or you need to be saving, you know, that little bit extra money to be able to get a good midfielder, or, you know, really good centre back, whatever it might be.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky to say. And in terms of also, you know, I'm starting to think of, would it be better developing your next striker in a situation like that, when you have a DP come in, you have DK in there, and whoever else, that is like, do you want to make that third or fourth striking position a young kid? You know, who can be like, I mean, do you really want to spend $150,000 a year on a 30-something-year-old guy as that late sub, when really that kind of traditionally goes to a younger player earning their stripes and getting their early minutes?
Yeah, I mean, if we can find like that player, because I don't think he's on the roster right now. It's not going to be Emery Welshman. I say that. I don't ever really see much of Welshman. I doubt it's going to be him. But
there's been little to indicate that would be the case.
Yeah, you know, hopefully there's some team out there that's kind of desperate to dump salary or whatever it is, and, you know, we can maybe steal some, you know, good young striker and give him a go.
I want to just round through the game quickly, though, because I think a good use of time.
Keep getting
would be
away from the game, but
you know, it's gone like that recently. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, with the end of the season, the game's really not meaning that much. I mean, to scrutinize the actual gameplay, to go ahead and look for something, it's just, you know, there's a bigger picture, I think, that's more interesting for us to discuss. I mean, obviously, as you run through that first half, how well Toronto did in creating chances, like we discussed, but you go into the second half, and, you know, maybe two players that I'd single out down the stretch, and I think it's maybe a bit of a coincidence that we're doing this podcast again, because the last one we were, you know, gushing over Steve Caldwell and how much we both enjoy Iron Brew. Those are the two things from, I think it was the Houston game, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds about right.
And I think that's, you know, that was, there's maybe one encouraging thing, and when you want to look forward and whatnot, is that, you know what, yeah, Caldwell had a really good game and showed a lot of the things I think that we were pretty stoked on when he started playing well for us, in terms of the way that he carried himself on the back line, the small details of his game that we haven't seen so much, in terms of just being like calmly being able to head the ball instead of just away. keep the possession, you know what I mean? Things like that. And when he fouls a player, he doesn't linger around. He goes back into where he's supposed to be, and he's ready for the play to continue. Carries himself like a proper veteran, and I don't think there's been too many times in this club's history we've had that player on the team.
No, I mean, I think he is everything that I think Darren O'Day was supposed to be. I think, you know, Paul Mariner talked about looking for his like boss man at the back, and Caldwell has been that. And you look at just the whole early season thing, constantly letting in the late goals. When Caldwell got here, that stopped. And, you know, I think probably inside the last 20 games of the season, you know, there's maybe three or four games that happened, which is, you know, a regular rate. So, you know, that's one really good thing that he did. I think obviously he's going to be very good for Donnell Henry as well.
Do you see a difference in Henry's game between before and after, like for the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think earlier in the season, like the first half of the season, it was all like Donnell Henry. It's like, oh, he's obviously got some like physical attributes. There's a skills that you can kind of see what he might be. But then it's like every game there was like some. He was an adventure. is a polite way of saying
that's
it.
That's a very polite way
and,
of saying it.
You know,
it makes it sound like it was fun.
Yeah. And there was like red cards. He was getting all like mistakes here or there. And, you know, I think he's definitely cut down on that. I can't say that's something I've really been like noticing. It's just like, Donnell Henry. He's on like the left, like next to Ashton Morgan. It seems like after like Jonas Elmer got here, like Morgan's game seemed to pick up for, you know, just he realized, oh shit, there's competition. I need to, really buckle down. And, you know, I think for a while there, that's a left-hand side of the defense. Maybe it's, that doesn't look all that great. But, yeah, towards the end of the season, you know, I've got no problem with those two being out there. I think they could obviously be improved on, I think. I think, you know, ideally, when you look at the four we have out there right now, Caldwell for sure. And, you know, you got to hope for somebody better than Bloom at right back. I think Bloom's all right. I'd be fine with him staying as a backup. And then the left-hand side, Henry and Morgan, it's like, they're both okay. I'd be totally fine with one of them, plus some as-yet-unknown player who's better than the other. Whether it's, you know, we get a better left-back or a better centre-back, whichever it is, and, you know, have the other one as backup. I think if we're relying on both of them being out there as the regular starting lineup, then, you know, yeah, next year, then you may be looking at it as, we didn't really do enough to improve the defence in the off-season.
Yeah. The last player, of course, I want to touch on, we obviously mentioned him at the start when we were comparing, you know, the keeper situation and whatnot, but I wanted just to kind of maybe just give, if I had to maybe go with a man of the match, I mean, there were some good players and Caldwell was up there, but I think, Bendik made two massive game-saving saves that I think, when I've sort of looked at him through the season, I've sort of been like hot and cold on how I feel about him as a keeper. And when I would compare him to our previous keepers, I kind of felt like Stefan Fry and Milos Kosic did seem to have a knack just to be able to make those huge saves that would either keep us in a game, let's be honest, we were winning a lot of them, but that would be like in 1v1 situations or, you know, really great shots that they would be fully outstretched and saving. And I felt like Bendik didn't quite have that kind of display, but on Saturday he had two amazing ones that maybe gives hope that, you know, when we're in a tight game, he's the guy that's going to keep us in it.
Yeah, I mean, he's, as you say, like hot and cold, you described him. Yeah, that's kind of how he's been. I think, you know, he started off the season quite well. And there was a game in April in Philadelphia where they were just all over us. He made God knows how many saves.
Right.
And then, you know, right at the end, we just leave McInerney alone in the box and, you know, we give up the result there. I think at that point it was like, oh, yeah, Bendik, he's a good goalie, then, you know, he's for the rest of the season, you know, there's been ups and downs. There's a few goals where it's like, oh, you should not have let that in.
Oduro, like, short side.
There you go, yep. I'm okay with Bendik. He's a good average MLS goalie at his current salary cap. It's, you know, that's great value. Presumably, you know, if he's now officially our first choice goalie, which it seems to be, he's going to be looking for a raise on that to, you know, maybe around like 100k or something. I think he's got to get himself, you know, he obviously wants to earn some money, but you don't want to price yourself out of the team completely like Stefan Fry did. So yeah, I'm okay.
When new management comes in, they will go over that ledger and names will be scratched out. Just so you know, Bendik, take note of what happened this year when you look for that next pay raise.
Yeah, Ryan Nelson likes you. He wants to pay you this much. That's nice. The next guys, and there will be next guys very quickly. You know, they're going to look at that and think, yeah, maybe not. We'll go with Chris Konopka at $50,000 instead. So yeah, get yourself a raise, but not too much of a raise.
Enough to have a, you know, nice little apartment in the city.
Yeah, enough to be able to move out and live on your own. You know, that'd be nice. Everyone likes that. I wouldn't resent you that, but, you know.
I wanted to do, maybe not in an official capacity, but maybe just like, you know, it's the day after the end of the season, some kind of like little post-mortem on 2013, and maybe just touch on a few questions, Duncan, that, you know, we can kind of get it rolling, and as the months go by, and maybe we'll kick out a few more podcasts, like more things can be brought up. I think one thing I kind of wanted to discuss, and one thing that, you know, we heard during the game and after the game, that they were talking about how many games Toronto had. And you mentioned it too, where, you know, those last minute goals. There, if we probably broke down and looked through this season, I'm sure we'd come with a lot of points that we could have argued they should have had, especially in the early going of the season.
Yeah, so the first couple of the months of the season, there was a while there, it was like, happened like six or seven games in a row or whatever it is, and it's just,
And when you look at teams like Montreal, and you look at a team like Chicago last week, and these are the teams that are, you know, that core MLS side that's in the playoff hunt, and compare ourselves to them, I think my question I'm looking for is, you know, are we that far off from those sides? And sort of what is the right step for this team to take in order to not just be dropping all these points and sitting in the bottom four, but holding on to them and finding themselves more in the mid-table pushing towards the top?
Yeah, and it's difficult to say. I mean, it's MLS. I mean, I don't think any side is that much like ahead or that much behind of anyone, really. I mean, you know, it's remarkable how TFC have managed to stay on the lower side of that, like their entire existence, but... You know, it's not like that far. I mean, we talked about Caldwell in that whole late goal thing. I mean, especially when there was him and like Labber there as well. It's like, all right, that we seem to have fixed this now. And the main issue I think we've had is just like creativity and actually creating the chances and scoring and that sort of thing. I think, you know, defensively, aside from the odd game here or there, you know, right now we're not that bad. I mean, we did concede fewer goals than Montreal this season. We talk about comparing ourselves to, you know, their middle of the pack, you know, hopefully dropping down to sixth as we speak. I don't know. But yeah, we conceded fewer than Montreal. So, you know, it's maybe not like defensively. I think the big thing is, you know, we do need to be, you know, getting those players who can actually like create chances consistently and score them. And, you know, put, say, Marco De Vaio on, like, TFC this season and take him off Montreal, and you know, we'd probably be, like, very close, or, you know, we'd be the ones maybe getting to the playoffs and Montreal would look hopeless.
Yeah. I mean, when I was watching this game and I was kind of trying to hash that question in my head and looking at this team and sort of what are we right now, and I would say, you know, you look at that starting lineup, and to me that's depth. Like, those are depth players. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's lacking is, you know, really scrutinizing the players out there and being like, this is definitely somewhere we can upgrade the quality. Of course, it's in the attack, you know, in that attacking midfielder role, and probably on the back line as well, if we're serious. There's probably a couple spots. And that's where it's like we can't, again, get tied into nostalgia or the fan favoritism, I guess, towards some of these guys and saying, you know, we have to be honest that we are in the bottom half of the table and there's a reason. You know, part of it is, you know, the state of the club, part of it is the revolving door of coaches, but also part of it is the squad that is out there and the players that are playing for this team.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's still not good enough. I mean, there's, you know, probably like four players that you think, you know, if you kind of look through the season, think, all right, who would be your like man of the season? There's, you know, there's probably four options that anyone it would like boil down to, just like Bendik, Caldwell, Labber, and Osorio. Aside from that, you know, and I think, you know, those are probably the only ones that I'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm fine with those guys in the first team, no problem at all. Yeah, they're great. And even like Osorio, I think, yeah, if we can get someone else in, if he has to move to the bench, that'd be fine. So yeah, I mean, there's very few real, yeah, absolutely nailed on, you know, people who say would walk into any MLS side. You know, there isn't really many of those. You know, we've got a lot of, you know, these guys are okay. You know, ideally, you know, you've it's MLS, it's never going to be perfect. You're going to have probably two or three players on any, like, 11 on the pitch at any time where it's like, well, you know, they're okay. You know, they don't let the side down, but they're not great players. I mean, the problem is that, you know, TFC's probably got, like, seven or eight of those guys. And, you know, we need to bring some quality and move those, a bunch of those guys down to the bench and, you know, move who's currently on our bench down to, you know, just the reserve team. But, you know, I think that's, you know, part of the problem is we've tried to do that every single year.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime you have to tear down, like, the team and, you know, just, you're going to take a step back and then hopefully eventually you take two steps forward. But, you know, if you keep taking that step back without really giving yourself time to actually take those steps forward, then you're going to end up a long way back.
Yeah.
And that's,
and that one step forward is, and that one step forward is you're still 10 steps back.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you say, oh, we need to be getting new players in, but maybe, you know, there's an argument to be said. It's like, you know, let's just stick with some players because there's only, you know, a certain level of quality that's going to be there. You've got that level of quality plus, like, instability and unfamiliarity. It's not going to be as good as that level of players who've been together for a few years and, you know, kind of know what each other is going to do. I mean, you know, that's maybe, like, the easiest way to improve the quality is just, you know, stick with what you've got more or less and let them develop those, like, relationships between players and those partnerships, and, you know, that familiarity can be the thing that takes them to the next level rather than, oh, we've got to bring this guy in from outside.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's such a, you know, it's been such a, I don't know if cliche is what I'm looking for. It's, you know, a word that just is so thrown, it's been thrown around with Toronto FC, and that is stability. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it can be overstated that is probably a key component when we're looking at mm-hmm. this side and what's moving forward. I mean, it's always thrown around with coaching, but I've always, especially this year, I really think you could see it in the starting 11, that when we've had that same team, you know, playing for a month or two together, the team has turned small corners in terms of their performances and looking a little bit better. And we've seen it a little bit at the end of this year that they've had a good, we've had a good core, but that's just it, you know, keeping that core and just singling out, we need to upgrade this, we need to upgrade that, and just let these guys keep building together. And I think that's something worth sticking with as we look through this offseason. It's like, yeah, okay, obviously if we have a real goal poacher up top, that's a big step forward. And if we can find an upgrade on the D, that's another massive step. Like, you know, I think you could probably make a pretty easy case for, you know, all three areas of the pitch could use one more quality upgrade.
Absolutely.
And then I think you could build a case that there is a pretty decent chance, if it sticks together, we could be a legitimately competitive team in MLS and probably earning some results.
Yeah, legitimately competitive, yeah. As in, you know, we'll be maybe getting close to the playoffs next year. You know, it's possible. Can they pull it off? Is the big question.
Yeah.
But
I say that in the sense that it's like, yeah, you know, we could see games this year. Yes, they were competitive in the game. But in my heart of hearts, you know, I was always like, we can't score. Like,
yeah.
We have no,
yeah, this
we don't year, score by design. We, a lot of times we score by accident.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, that's an issue.
Yeah.
For me to say, oh, hey, this is a competitive team. Well, they're playing competitively now, but on a whole, they're not.
Yeah, we were a competitively poor team. You know, we weren't a good team, but whether it's like coaching or just, you know, the tactics, the style they played, they were difficult to beat most games. We seem to drag a lot of teams down to our level, which, you know, maybe doesn't make for the greatest football to watch for the neutral, but, you know, it's pretty much about all we could ask for, really, I think, with this team. It's like, yeah, it's so, you know, I mean, again, I'm not entirely convinced by Ryan Nelson, but I think, you know, he did a decent job with what he had this year. But, you know, I think that's maybe a fairly, that's the first step is, all right, just let's get a good basic defensive thing going. Now, can he take the next step and take a more talented squad and get them playing a good style that can be creating chances and scoring goals? Is he the coach to do that? I don't know. But just the basics of getting a poor team to at least play well defensively, I think Nelson did all right with that this year.
Yeah.
Which is a start. It's something.
I think as we're kind of winding down in sort of that last 5-10 minutes of the podcast and giving a little moment to reflect on the season, and there'll be other chances, I think, to really break it down, but I think my initial thing, Duncan, that I wanted to talk about and maybe pose to you is, if we're looking back on 2013, I guess maybe depending on what your answer is, maybe a little into 2012 at the end of the season, and how this year has gone for us, finding a way to, you know, have a maybe a negative but finish with a positive, so everyone's at least at least feeling a little bit better,
sure,
about the state of things. Question I think I wanted to throw out there was, you know, through this season, you know, could things have been different if we hadn't have made, you know, one particular bad move or one particular decision? And then on the flip side, maybe discussing, you know, was there one good thing that sort of stands out to you that at least gives you some sort of security or comfort looking into 2014?
Mm-hmm. I'd say it's like the bad thing, there's like a couple of options really, and I don't think any of them really, either of them, like really affected the team this year. It's more kind of about the future, but it would be either like the draft. I mean, obviously going in, we've got number one and number three, and you know, that could be Andrew Farrell, Deshaun Brown, Dylan Powers. Like there's, you know, quite a few players that have really contributed to their team this year that were drafted, and we could have had any one of those. And you know, Chivas seemed determined to pick Carlos Alvarez.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically, aside from him, we could have had two of those, any of the rookies that are out there, we could have had two of those. And it's difficult to say, cause, I mean, we don't know exactly how much allocation money we got for them, but, you know, coming out of it was Kyle Becker and Emery Welshman. It's, you know, from having like 1-3, it's, you know, to end up with that and random amount of cash, it seems a bit disappointing.
Mystery amount of cash.
Yeah. I mean, maybe none of those players really would have helped this season, but, you know, we could have, I mean, we talked before about having a core of players and going in, you know, we had, say, like Luis Silva and, you know, these two picks. That could have been, you know, three really good guys to be building it around. And you know, that would be my other, you know, potential for worst move would be, you know, just giving up on Silva. I mean, last year he had a very promising year, and he didn't really seem to be fitting in all that well this year, but you know, either he'll adapt and he will kind of start playing well in the system, or maybe in the future, you know, we do start playing a style that kind of fits him better and he can be a valuable player. So I mean, again, to give him up, you know, and you look about like building a car, and you know, Silva from 2012 and then like these two guys theoretically from 2013, you know, you'd hope to be able to use that, and you know, that can be something to be building around for the next, you know, 5 or 10 years, whatever it is, and we got a bit of allocation cash from it. And
yeah,
you
know,
don't know how much, that's the problem.
Yeah,
it's, yeah,
just like the quick interjection to not cut you off, but I think that would be one criticism I think on this season for me would be Nelson didn't find a way for some of these young guys to play to their strengths. You know, I'm thinking of Silva, Ashton Morgan, and Kyle Becker, I would say, where it's like, these are the, you know, this is the hand that you've been dealt. You know it's going to be tough, but these guys, they all have their strengths. And I don't think he found the way to really let them show them, in terms of, we know what Ashton Morgan is good at. Mm-hmm. We know what he's bad at. So, you know, to have him stay this sort of like flat 4-4-2, with him kind of just feeding it up and letting Bobby Convey or whatever winger deal with that, and not really say, okay, we're going to really try to work him as sort of a wing back and an overlap and let him get some crosses in and set it up. There's a big target man up front. You've just really much taken his game out of him. And then we talk about Silva, where it's like, we're talking about Montreal right now. And one of Silva's good games was against Montreal, where he was able to operate in tight spaces, you know, control the ball at his feet, lay it off to guys, have a bit of vision to see where his players were going. And I didn't see a lot of that this year.
No, I mean, for Silva, yeah, it was very strange. I mean, he never really seemed to get going at the start. And then, you know, is he playing kind of out on the wing or as a second striker? It never really seemed to, like, find a place within that formation. So, you know, I don't really think it affected the team that much, like, this year. But it's like, okay, at some point, he's going to figure out how to play in this lineup, or we're going to have to change things around where, oh, you know who'd be great right now for this, what we're trying to do? Luis Silva. But, oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we never really got the best out of him this year. For Morgan, you know, you've got to hope maybe it's just, you know, this is maybe something he needs to be told. Yeah, you need to be more defensive. You need to figure this out. So, you know, maybe in the long run, this will be a good thing. It's like a tough year for him. It doesn't look like we're really playing to his strengths right now, but you know, maybe this is like the learning curve that he's going through, just, you know, these struggles, and he'll eventually get that down and he can be, you know, a fairly solid defender, like a better defender than he is right now. And then, you know, at that point, you know, maybe it's like loosen things up a little, and you know, you give him the license to be going down the wing, like maybe as much as he was like in 2012. So yeah, that's me like trying to be positive about that. But yeah, it hasn't been a great season for Morgan at all. But you know, maybe this is just that tough season he needs and make him a better player overall.
We'll see.
Yeah.
See, well, what about? Can you single out one thing though this year that at least you're like, that was a good move, and it's going to look okay for us in 2014.
I think that's going to be Matthias Laba. The obvious one, really. I mean, he's just such a good player. It's like, oh yes, this is like one of the few times, you know, I can think, yeah, we've definitely done something right here. And you know, he's at a young age still. It's not like, oh yeah, we Torsten Frings look great, but how old is he? I mean, Laba could be potentially here for years or sold on, whatever it might be. It was like similar to like 2012 when, you know, Kuvermans got injured and then the season kind of goes downhill. We were doing okay in like June and July, whatever it was. I mean, we had like a 2-game winning streak, and then, you know, it's like Laba gets injured, and then it all kind of goes a bit wrong. And then, you know, we get a couple of wins at the end of the season. It's like DC and Montreal. But for a while there, it's like, oh, Laba going out, like really sort of killed off the team. I think, you know, if he can be playing regularly, keep fit, he's going to be a very good player. He's just, his vision and it's, you know, awareness of what's happening on the pitch seems to be just so far ahead of, you know, it's like Jeremy Hall, Darryl Russell, like whoever his replacements were. So, you know, good on Kevin Payne for bringing that guy in. You know, Aruti didn't work out one way or another, but, you know, I really like the idea of what Kevin Payne was trying to do there. He had to get like younger, talented guys in, and you know, Laba is unqualified success.
Yeah, I would say probably in 7 years, it's a very short list, I think, of players that, you know, you could just sit at BMO Field and just say, like, I'm just going to watch this guy. Mm. And the little things that he does and the way that he, you know, commands himself on the pitch. And it's really, off the top of my head, it's Laba and Frings were two players where you could just sit there and just almost everything they did, you're like, that was awesome. The vision that you're talking about, or they just do something small, you're like, fuck, that was really smart. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy really has something that's just outside of physical attributes that is going for him.
I mean, often, you know, he's got the ball, there's like two or three players around him, he'll find a way to, you know, get out of that tight spot, get the ball to one of our guys. It's a lot of simple things that he does, but he just does them so well. It's I like Laba.
Yeah, it's impressive. And you know what? I mean, you touched on it. If I had to pick mine, it's sort of in a facetious way, I would have probably said the bad move was signing Rudy and the good move was trading him. And there's a lot to pick from. And
I'm very intrigued to see exactly how it goes with the Rudy at Portland. Is he going to be, oh yeah, he was a really good player, why did we let him go? Or is it going to be, yeah, that guy was never going to work in MLS?
I don't think he would have worked here. And I think I'm just befuddled about that signing after we brought in Laba. I mean, we had our young DP. Mm-hmm. So to then all of a sudden bring in another young guy and put this pressure on him, even though he wasn't, obviously, he was miraculously making exactly that salary under that tag, but he was not.
Nope.
He was not a DP.
Nope. Any other kind of
who
DP.
Who was it? Adrian Syria and co-host were calling him a DP and were told to stop during the telecast. But no, apparently he wasn't. But it was something about that just to me didn't make sense. Where I was like, okay, you picked up this young DP and now you're shooting for this other one. Why wouldn't experience would have made no sense? And I've said it before on this podcast a bunch of times when it's like, you see the guy who's now relegated to the bench and he's on his contract is only 1 year and he scores 24 goals. Nope, there never crossed your mind to shift gears to maybe go for the proven goal scorer who's in his prime and is a proven commodity. No, we'll stick with this guy and hope that it pans out and we can sell him on. Like, that's that's unfortunate. Yeah. But then, you know, the thing was, is like, they brought him in. And I would say I'm moderately excited about Bright DK. I think he's got a lot of attributes. The only question that I don't know is his finishing, but I think he brings a lot of stuff that's a strength in MLS, right?
I do think he's an injury waiting to happen. I mean, I think he's had injury concerns like throughout his career, and just looking at the way he plays and just how he throws himself into like the game, and there's like certain challenges and that sort of thing. It's just like, oh yeah, I can totally see how this dude is going to get injured on a regular basis. You know, hopefully there isn't anything as serious. Like, was it an ACL he had?
Yeah.
You know, at least it's not going to be anything that serious, but I could see him being, you know, often in and out of the lineup. But yeah, I mean, with how we're playing right now, DK makes perfect sense in this team. He's, you know, he's the style of forward that I think, you know, Nelson would have loved to have been able to put out there all year, which I think, you know, Arudi was never going to be. I mean, you know, ideally, maybe in Kevin Payne's head, he was going to be slowly building something that would make sense, that Arudi would fit into, and it'd be all skillful and all that sort of thing. But if that's what he was trying for, then why get rid of Luis Silva? I don't know. but yeah, for like TFC 2013, DK made more sense, and you know, got a draft pick, some allocation money out of it as well. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what Arudi does. If he can make it in MLS, or he'll just kind of slowly fade to the bench and then back
returns
to
Argentina
or wherever after a year or so of nothing.
Yeah. And then I think, as we just segue out of it, the last short segment, you mentioned four guys that I think are the obvious. Do you have a guy that you think that was the player of the year?
It's difficult. I mean, I would say like our best player is Laba, but then, you know, he only played probably about half a season with the injury. Caldwell, again, good player, but, you know, didn't play the whole season. Bendik, you know, did play the whole season. I don't think he's as good a player as those, but he probably contributed more to the season as a whole. I think out of those, you know, I'd probably go with Caldwell. You know, he did make a big difference. He, you know, at the in the defense, you know, you can tell, and, you know, he helped Tammy, like everyone we were talking about earlier. So, and, you know, he was here long enough, but I think, yeah, you know, I give him, because he's like, probably got over 20 games, I think, 20-something, so yep. He's definitely better than Bendik. I prefer Laba, but Laba didn't really contribute as much because of the injury and everything, so I'd go with Caldwell. I'm comfortable with that.
I would agree. Two votes for Caldwell, I think, is what I would go with. I think that's, in a lot of different facets, I'm pretty happy about him as a signing, just in terms of, I mean, he comes here at a great salary rate. That's a good start.
And one thing about Caldwell as well, he's been playing since last August. He did like the full season over in with Birmingham the last time he was
there? Yeah.
He did like the full season there, then just came in and kept going for like another 6 months over here. So it's like, how is this dude not exhausted? I mean, you know, he's
Scottish.
Exactly. He's like 33 and he plays a very physical game. It's like, how is he just kept going? It's, you know,
yeah,
it's, I think that, admirable, really.
I mean, and that's another thing. It's just like, Toronto doesn't usually get that sort of like clean sweep when they sign a player, in terms of, shit, they signed him for a reasonable salary. Mm-hmm. He's got an amazing attitude.
Yeah.
And he's a good player.
Yeah.
Usually it's like, okay, Darren O'Dea has a great attitude. He's a pretty good player, and his salary sucks,
yeah.
Right? And same thing with Eckersley. Like, it's usually something is way off center in one of these guys that makes you be like, this is a terrible deal. I don't want this guy here.
Caldwell, you know, out of anyone he reminded me of, it's, you know, maybe it's like Kyle Robinson, who's maybe a little too expensive, but, you know, he's a decent salary. He's a good player, like, great character and everything. But, like, yeah, you know, we've got our next one of like that type of player. So, you know, I'm intrigued to see exactly how we screw this one up and exactly how we end up pissing him off and pushing him out.
We'll make him
the
player of the year, but, and then he'll want a raise, and you know, that will be leaked in the media. He's a real asshole or something like that, and then we'll all pile on him and tell him to go fuck off.
Yeah, then he'll be injured, and then we can get rid of him, and
he'll retire and become a scout.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, you know what, Duncan? I think we should wrap it up at that point, because we're hitting a pretty lengthy part of the podcast. But thanks for coming out. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Like I said, this is the last one of the season, but there's plenty to still go over. I think we could have hashed over tons of things and just kept going for another hour or two. We won't put you all through that, but...
Maybe that's an entirely other pod, you know? Give it a week or two, let things settle, and then, all right, let's full-on dissection of exactly what happened.
Yeah, 2013. I think that's a good idea. Duncan Fletcher, he's got two Twitter handles. Mm-hmm. That's how you do it. You're at Waking the Red. And at Duncan Fletcher?
At Duncan D. Fletcher.
Duncan D. Fletcher.
Some guy took just basic Duncan Fletcher.
I stole your name. I remember this. Last time we were talking about that asshole.
Yes.
You can catch him there. And obviously, those are the Twitter handles. And at Waking the Red.
Yes. And one thing, I can just put out a little promo here. We're just talking there about, who's your number one player of the year? Waking the Red, we are going to be doing our... full countdown of every single TFC player over the next sort of month or so. So, if you want to rank all the TFC players, so tweet at me or send me an email, duncanfletcher@gmail.com. And we're going to be doing that starting next week or so. So.
Oh, yeah, you take submissions for that, right?
Absolutely.
You come in and
we want a democratic fan vote.
Yeah.
All that sort of thing. So, yeah.
That's good. Okay. When you're doing that and we get another one in, then we'll promote that again. And then, of course, I'm Clark RNO and have your say at Red Nation Online. And I guess, stay tuned. We'll put something out there when the next episode is coming up. But I think you can all expect to see some more post-mortems through the next few months. And there'll probably be lots still going on. So thanks a lot for listening, guys. And we'll catch you in the next one.
Eastside Stand-Up is the only Toronto Sea Specific podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to be involved. Reach out to us on Twitter through #ESSU or at Red Nation Online. You can email us at haveyoursay@rednationonline or info@rednationonline. Get into the discussion on Toronto FC through Eastside Stand-Up and Red Nation Online. He'll understand you, for you are